Let's get her going on our national hour, the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. I'm Nick Kyprios. He's Justin Bourne. He is Sammy McKee.
Derek, Canada
win. Derek Brandeo.
In the world championship.
David Sisboomba. And now you say that.
Canada wins.
There you go. After Sisboomba.
They almost blew the biggest lead in world championship history.
Who to? To Sweden? To
a really
Russia?
Good team.
To USA?
Austria.
Oh!
Throw another shrimp on the Barbie. The Austrians.
We are live on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver and Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This hour, Real Kipper and Bourne, brought to you by Bet365. So I'm trying to see the goals.
Yeah. What, do you, what was your response to the question? Hey, Kipper, were they good goals? What'd you say?
Yeah, no.
That's generous.
No.
They're up 6-1. So, game went OT at 6-6.
Looks like a lot of the goals that helped your team miss the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
Or get knocked out in the first round.
Yeah. Weird how you end up those players. Who was the pizza, the last one?
Gooley just bounces right off his stick. Marco Rossi picks it up and just somehow puts it through Binnington's pad to tie the game at 6-6.
All right.
So there
John,
you go.
John Tavares, the OT winner, 15 seconds in.
All right. In a few minutes, we're going to get Luke Gazdik to join us. Talk Oilers Vancouver. Critical game tonight.
Yes.
All right. Derek Brandeo says he's good to go. Let's welcome him in. Luke, what's going on? How are you, pal?
What's up, guys? So how are we doing today?
You and you're an ex-Oiler. Kevin Bieksa is an ex-Vancouver. I mean, you guys are covered there, right? When you work together.
Yeah. I mean, Kev's gone for the week, to be honest.
So I'm
solo. But it was fun leading up to that. He'll be back. it was fun kind of jousting off camera. And obviously he has a lot of pride for his alumni team and me as well. But he's taking a little break. So I got to steer the ship on the desk for the week.
So tons of storylines here. No bigger than Calvin Pickard starting tonight for the Edmonton Oilers. Let's get your thoughts on a controversial call, not a controversial call. Is this a game-changing moment here in the series?
I don't think it's a controversial call. I'll say that I'm a little surprised by it. I think my stance leading into this was he's your guy. Like I think you live and die and ride with your guy and your starter. I didn't think they would go to pick, but to be honest, it shows an extreme lack of confidence in Stu. And I don't think it's just this playoffs. I think they've taken, you know, into consideration the past as well and the playoff run last year. But I think it's rubbing off on the whole group. I think the way Stu has played has kind of brought the intensity level and confidence level down for the entire group. So this might be the spark that they need. And hoping to see the real Oilers team, to be honest, because I don't think we've seen them in the first three games yet.
Well, that's, you know, going into the series, that I was saying that I didn't think Vancouver had a chance. I really didn't. Just having watched the Oilers since Chris Knobloch took over, and this has not looked like them. So to, you know, take a look at Vancouver's side and say, what are they doing that is making it such a challenge? I don't think the Oilers had a 5-on-5 goal last game. What has surprisingly been good from the Canucks so far?
So I know this is easy for me to say because they're up 2-1, but Vancouver's a team that I've covered the entire year. There's lots of late nights in studio where we're doing regional Vancouver games. I've seen them play all 82 games in the regular season. And so this, to me, is not surprising. This is a Canucks team that has been counted out time and time again. And every time that we think they're going to fold or they start to walk backwards in their play, they don't. It's coaching, it's goaltending, and it's a general attitude around their team where it's kind of like us against the world. I really do think that starts with JT Miller. Him and Quinn Hughes bring a different type of dynamic in terms of their leadership. Quinn, a little more quiet, soft-spoken, leads by example. JT leads with his play. I think he's been a huge factor in it. If you watch the way they've played against the Oilers' top players, they've made it a lot harder than the Oilers have on the Canucks' top players. They haven't necessarily shadowed Connor, but they are aware every time he hops over the boards. There is a line or an individual that knows where he is at all times. You always hear that saying as a player, don't let him off the hook. Coaches always say, don't let him off the hook. And that is exactly what they've done to 97. I just think they've played a better two-way game. I thought the Oilers deserved better in game three. Seelov's played outstanding, but they've had the better goaltending also, which has helped them.
In terms of Draisaitl and McDavid together, not together, mere fact that Knobloch has needed them the other night to play 30 minutes. Like, my first thought is, even if they get past Vancouver somehow and this thing most likely goes seven games, what's going to be left of these two guys if they're going 30 minutes a night to go against, in all probability, Dallas?
Yeah, I mean, he's running them pretty good right now. And to be honest, I think he's handcuffed by the fact that he's getting nothing out of their bottom six. And when I say nothing, there's one assist through seven players. Holloway, Fogle, Brown, Janmark, Ryan have combined for one assist in the series. I mean, it's just, it's not good enough, right? I think it's Chris thinking that he has to almost entirely depend his offense around the top six. I think that's what's probably hurt them the most, is there's really only a couple guys giving them production. It's my general philosophy with this team that I think they should play separate. I think they should be able to drive their own lines. Leon in particular, he's more than willing and capable to do that. The line of Hyman, McDavid, and Nugent Hopkins had some real success, especially during the 16-game heater they were on. So I really like that line together, and I'm glad Dylan Holloway's getting a shot in the top six. I know I just said he has 0 points, but I really do think he can excel beside Leon. He's a guy that can drive play.
Wasn't the depth supposed to be looked after at the trade deadline here? Like, wasn't that about getting more depth for you behind those guys? Like, what is going on?
Yeah, and I think the Henrik injuries really hurt them. I think he was a much bigger part to their forward core than people really realized until he got hurt. He played 11 minutes, just under 11 minutes in game two. He's obviously hurting. That's a huge part of it. They traded for Sammy Carrick, and I would be fairly upset if I was Sammy Carrick or even Sam Gagne, who I think has deserved a shot in this bottom six. If you're watching, you know, the six or seven guys that are getting dressed every night, I think one of those two guys has deserved a shot. But they definitely have to be better. It's a huge part of why they haven't had success.
Luke, players don't like to do it, but fans are all over the refereeing in this series. Do you feel like it's been lopsided one way or another? If you could also give us your take on the final incident of the game there where McDavid eats a cross check, get your thoughts on that. But generally, the officiating in the series, has it had some influence to you?
I just think it's been inconsistent. And on both sides, there was one penalty that I referenced in between the first and the second last game, and it was Nurse's cross check, where it reminded me of the Brady Shea one on Trocheck in overtime with Carolina and New York,
push.
Where it just the push, right? And Nurse does that in a battle. It didn't really have too much effect on the play. He calls him for two, and then there's the cross check in front of the net on, I think it was Zadorov in front, which was really soft play to call, that different than the one at the end of the game. This one just a couple minutes left in the game, just inconsistent. I just think we're in round two now. There's a ton of calls that I'm watching that I'm like, really? Like, can we let these go? Can we let the boys play? The stuff at the end of the game, listen, I didn't like the whole sequence. Susie, I don't think intends to cross check him in the face. Zadorov, that's a little bit of a cheap one on the back. The McDavid slash, I mean, that's nothing. That's a love tap. You want to see a slash? Go back to the Vegas Edmonton series last year. Petrangelo on Draisaitl, that's a slash. Connor's was a little tap. I didn't think it warranted a cross check to the face. My biggest thing on that whole thing is the response from the Oilers, or, you know, should I say lack of response from the Oilers. I continually think, watching this Florida-Boston series, can you imagine if that was Barkov and that was the Florida Panthers?
Right.
I mean, there would be a full-on brawl. And I do expect probably a little retribution here in game four, and whether that's not getting out hit 50-30 or at least sticking up for your number one center. I didn't like the way the whole situation played out for either side.
Vancouver doing a terrific job on the forecheck here. Give us your thoughts on that blue line in Edmonton and the thought of maybe 11-7 bringing in Broberg on the blue line. Will that make a difference? Will that help or just confuse things?
I am philosophically against 11-7, and I think it's because I played and yeah. I hated all it forwards, when I played. Yeah. It's just like the defensemen hate it too. The seventh defenseman who plays will end up playing no minutes. You have no chemistry with your line mates. Me as a fourth liner, you're constantly playing with a different third guy every shift you're out there. It's kind of miserable. I think this kind of leads back to the depth and getting no production out of them. He's almost handcuffed or forced to do this. Listen, Vancouver's been outstanding on the forecheck. That line of Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland and Elias Lindholm has been a nightmare for the Oilers D. I have grown to, dare I say, love Dakota Joshua as a hockey player. Yeah. This guy is a gamer. Hits, will scrap, has a really nice skill set, wins battles, makes plays. He has he's been a terror to the Oilers D. And it's just another situation where I think there's a number of guys on that blue line that have to be better. I will probably say that Matthias Ekholm is probably the only guy I can say that I've liked his game. I think the other five guys, I think, have a lot of room to go up.
You know, you look at the deadline, how it affected these teams. You mentioned Carrick is not drawing in the lineup. Henrique hurt and not having an impact. On the other side, Elias Lindholm has scored 6 goals in the regular season, 5 in playoffs so far. And then Zadorov has been maybe the biggest, the most impactful defender for the Canucks. You know, tell me about those two Vancouver Canucks and what you've seen out of them. I think the minutes that Lindholm has played so far have been better than he gave them in the regular season.
Yeah, and I know you said we're tuned into Vancouver radio right now. I was on Vancouver radio when they were pitching trading Lindholm a month after trading for him.
Right.
Like, this was a real scenario where they were like, hey, is it a real thing where we could turn around and flip this guy to somebody else? Like, they wanted nothing to do with him. And, I mean, rightfully so. He wasn't playing a great brand of hockey, but he's come on really strong. I didn't know he had that physical side to his game. That's one thing that's really surprised me and Kev up there was every hit he lays, it's like, wow, like, where did this come from kind of thing? And, man, Zadorov's one of those guys you kind of love to hate. He's played the heel in the series, and he's a big boy who doesn't mind carrying the pill up the ice. And he's been a treat to watch as well. Physical, stands up for his teammates, and he's really been a thorn in the side of the Oilers.
Chilov's now is starting to kind of turn the corner towards one of those historic runs that you seldom see in NHL history here. I know there's a long way to go here still, but just the mere fact of what he's been able to do, and do you see a midnight striking Cinderella scenario here anytime soon, or can this guy do what perhaps Patrick Waugh did once upon a time, or Cam Ward did once upon a time for Carolina, run this thing?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, myself included, have kind of been waiting for this ball to drop and been waiting for the Oilers to finally solve him. I really haven't seen them be too flustered with a goaltender in particular like this in a while, but the kid's been outstanding. I'm not sure if, you know, tonight is the night, but a lot of credit has had to been given to him. You can tell, like, Quinn Hughes is in the post-game media availability talking about him and just how much he's rubbing off on the group, like how much confidence he's giving their team as a whole, as opposed to the Oilers on the other side. I think they're going to be able to solve him eventually. And I don't know if that's the right, you know, case of words there, but it's to me, it's only a matter of time before the top guys of the Oilers are going to get a couple past him here.
Guys, I'm going to give you quick Leon Draisaitl stats. Since playoffs career since 2022, games with 0 points, 6. Games with 1 point, 9. Games with 2 points, 9. Games with 3 points, 12. Or 3 plus points, 12. So this guy, all he does is pour pucks in the net in the playoffs. Unbelievable point. Like, his production is wild. We're here in Toronto. You've been watching the Leafs too. And, you know, Matthews and the Stars here haven't been able to replicate their regular seasons. What is it about Draisaitl that it's not just easy for him to replicate his regular season, but improve on it?
With Leon, the bigger the moment, the bigger the opportunity, the bigger the stage, the bigger he plays and the more juice he brings to it. It's fun thing to watch. We get so frustrated during the regular season. Like, how many times during this year with the body language and the mannerisms where you're like, what's this guy doing? You're just getting so frustrated with him. But it's like tough for him to play on a Tuesday night in Columbus. Like, it's tough for him to get engaged. And when he does, like, it's see you later. I think he's just been waiting for this moment the entire year. And that's not to say he gave up on regular season hockey. I just think the bigger the stage, he shows up. And man, is he fun to watch when he gets into beast mode, when he has the one arm going and he has the puck on the backhand and he's protecting it and winning battles and gearing down on faceoffs and shooting that one timer like he wants to put it through the net. He's easily one of the most fun players to watch in the league. And I'm hoping for one of those efforts tonight because he generally tends to bring it on home ice.
He is hurting, though. I mean, there's that, are you hurt or are you injured? Mm-hmm. I know this guy, it was unbelievable in years past with an ankle injury, but there's something going on there. He is not anywhere near, I know nobody's 100% this time of year, but I don't know if this guy's at 60 or 70%, but there's something going on with him. Do you sense that too? No.
I think you're right, but I think it's right around that time now, walking into game four and round two, where everyone's got something. Something's bothering every single person, probably on both rosters. I do see it a bit with Leon, but he's as tough as they come, honestly. You know, flaking on a broken foot or whatever it was in the Battle of Alberta, he'll bring it. But I think it's about that time in the playoffs where everyone's starting to feel it, and the Advil and the ice bags are all coming out about this time.
Guys, I did a little, looking into the ice tilt for AWS and been looking into some of the numbers in the story in the series, and it just looks like Edmonton has carried the play. Like, third period, the entire game was in Vancouver's end. They couldn't put enough pucks over the line. I guess to me, it's just like the start is so key, is it not? Like, once Vancouver gets up and they can kind of pack it in, it feels like that first shift last game, the Oilers were not prepared for what the Canucks brought. Does that put more pressure on their start tonight?
That's been a flaw of theirs all year.
It
just became a tendency of their game was slow starts, and they would get better and better. I mean, I acknowledge just one point. It might have even been on your show. At one point, they had the best third period goal differential in hockey. They go consistently up, but it drove me nuts to watch, and I'm sure it drove Oiler fans as well and hockey fans alike, where they just tiptoe into games a little bit. You know, they're it's not like they're not ready for the puck drop, but they kind of let the game come to them as opposed to pushing the pace early. And you're right. That first shift with Joshua and Garland and Lindholm, like, it's like that it sets the tone of the game, right? And you don't want to play from behind it, but it became something of their game in the regular season, and it's a little disappointing to see it carry into the offseason, or into the playoffs, especially at home, especially with your home crowd behind you. The quicker you can get those fans on your side and cheering and loud in a hockey game, the better. And I think that is probably the number one thing on their list tonight, especially if Pick's playing, which he looks like he is let's have a good start. And for me, that was always an individual thing. It wasn't even a coach motivating you. It was getting yourself ready for your first shift. I was generally so nervous before the start of games, so I always just told myself, get the first shift out of the way and then go to work. And I think that's whatever the thing everybody has to do down that lineup is worry about your first shift and winning your first shift and then go from there, you know?
Earlier in our hit, you mentioned the lack of confidence that they have in Skinner, but it also speaks well of the confidence that they have in Pickard. And good quality starts this season for him. I think 23 games in total, but a save percentage of .909. They really do believe that they can beat the Winnipeg or the Vancouver Canucks tonight with Pickard. Like, this isn't just a a hoper here. They really believe that based on his performance this season that he's capable of doing this tonight.
They do, and I think that's half the battle is belief. Here's a guy who stepped in multiple times during the season, and much like the way I talked about the Canucks earlier, where not much was expected, he blew away expectations, I'd say. Like, as a backup goaltender, it was a guy that the players kind of just jumped on board with very early, and I think half the battle is believing in your guy. And that's not something you can say about every goaltender or every backup that you'd put in, where maybe the mindset of the team is, you know, a little iffy and this might be a tough one tonight, boys. Like, these guys actually believe they can win. And for my money, that's half the battle. And it looks like this team really loves this guy. And hopefully they give him a good effort in front of him, because you know he's going to bring it in that.
Well, you gave us a good effort here on this segment, as you always do. Thanks for doing this, Luke.
Yeah, anytime, guys.
Thanks, okay. Guys.
Enjoy the game tonight. Luke Gazdik, Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada.
So doesn't that create a problem when you start Pickard? I'm always, I'm of one mind to this. If he goes in there and plays well for you tonight, so then you're going to start Pickard again? He's now, yes, your starting goalie?
Yes.
Yeah,
you're just done with Skinner.
Win and you're in.
Yeah,
that's where you're at in this series.
And if he's bad, sure, and gives up a couple softies in the first period,
then you beg Skinner to find his game, Stu, to keep the
come
series
on,
alive.
Stu.
Yeah, I would have gone back to Skinner. I think when you pull a guy at 4-2 and you're still in the game, that's you feel worse than you do if you're like pulled at 5-1.
Yeah. He wasn't that bad. I know everyone's going, he got to give you one more save. He does.
I watched him. That's not a guy that knows where his net is.
No.
He lost his net.
Yeah, okay.
And
then, I would have started Pickard tonight, too.
Yeah.
I think it's the right call. You need to get three before they get two wins.
Here's what I think is going to happen. I think he's going to be wonderful tonight.
I do.
I truly think Pickard's going to be very good for them. It's a big opportunity. He's actually got a very comparable situation going into this game tonight as Aiden Hill did for Vegas when Aiden Hill had kind of a hot playoff run. You know, first playoff start came later in their careers. They both had about 100 career games, you know, around 45 wins. They're in very similar spots.
How old is he? 29?
32.
Oh, he's that old. 32, playing the biggest game of your life.
Yep. Unfortunately, you can't claim the, you know, too young to realize how big the moment is. Like, he knows.
He knows, and you hope he's comfortable with it.
Yeah.
He's been.
You can't play young and dumb with that.
She loves.
Yeah.
Young and dumb.
Yeah. She loves, by the way, could not love this kid's look more. He's just greasy stash and the, you know, floral shirts, and he's just having a great time.
You guys want to hear,
Time. You got game time?
Well, we got clips.
Let's put a couple clips. We can get the game time
later
in the show.
I'm good with this.
I want to call him Chuck Knobloch so bad.
I know.
Every time I see it, I'm going to call him Chuck Knobloch. Chris Knobloch talked about
what
the decision.
Chuck, a pitcher?
I think he was a third baseman for the
third
New York
baseman.
Yankees.
Second
maybe?
Baseman?
No,
second
Minnesota
baseman.
Twins.
Minnesota Twins, yeah.
Sorry?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
But Yankees, too.
Yeah, he ended up
Yankees, too.
Yeah. I remember he got the yips really bad. Control.
Right.
Yeah, so let's play the first clip from Knobloch on the decision to start Pickard.
Looks like Kelvin Pickard will get the start tonight. Just give us a thought on what goes into that decision and what you expect from him.
Well, I'm expecting what I've seen from Kelvin all season. Goaltender has competed very hard, played very well for us, and piled up a lot of victories. And, and there's been times, you know, it's not a ideal situation. He hasn't been playing for a long time, but he's gone long stretches without playing, and I think the team has a lot of confidence in Kelvin when he has played, and he's gonna be our guy.
Guys, if Chris Knobloch were the coach of the Leafs, our show would have died after one season. We could not have had a Clipper coach's clip segment. It would not have lived.
Man, that sounds like an insurance seminar.
Oh my god.
The reason I cut it is because he says he's our guy. To me, that's a statement.
Yeah.
He's our guy.
Yeah.
He's
a guy.
He's a career backup guy.
He has to be our guy.
Yeah.
We have no choice.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to the good stuff.
Okay.
Zadorov today was asked about the Soucy suspension and he gave it an excellent quote. So let's play the Zadorov clip. We can go from there.
Yeah, he's a big part of our team. Obviously, it's a big loss for us. My thought on that, I mean, I've been thinking for a couple of days. I mean, the fortunately, that's the word we're living in. Sometimes, you know, social media and the public views can create some hard decisions for specific people, you know, and they might make questionable decisions at the end of the day. That's how I look at it. You know, at the end of the day, they have to protect their investment. So that's my understanding in this situation for sure.
Zadorov could have a show.
He could said have that social media
made
got,
them
got Susie suspended because Connor's the highest investment the league has.
He's right.
He did say that.
He's right. That's why he was suspended, because it was McDavid. He's right.
That's so fine. If that's
I disagree.
Evander Kane okay. or that.
Yeah, I don't think it's a suspension. I really don't. That's how I truly believe. And yeah. Carson Soucy's been playing against McDavid. He's a super important guy for them.
The damage is way worse if you don't suspend him on that play against
McDavid. Because
everyone
hunts Soucy and it becomes a sideshow.
Well, just you're going to side with Connor McDavid. That's all. That's my whole point. It's people would be up in arms right now if McDavid, if this didn't lead to a suspension off of McDavid.
You know what? It becomes a much bigger story league-wide.
It would have been much more of...
What are we doing?
Yes.
As a league, what are we doing if we're allowing Connor McDavid to wear
this,
that one?
This one's so much easier on the league. Just give him a game.
And give a game to Zach Hyman.
And my boy...
Doesn't work that way, Sam.
My Canucks fans, friends, shout out to my buddy Neil Corbett, talking about how they're just a different team without Susie. This is a significantly bigger loss than people... He thinks it is.
Him and Myers have been playing against McDavid the whole series.
And he's long and he's physical good. And he just puts everyone in the right slot.
He's fifth.
On the decor.
Yeah, but he's fifth in ice time out of the six, right?
Well, it doesn't mean he's unimportant.
I'm not saying that is.
Yeah.
I'm saying that he's still fifth on the depth chart of ice time. So that gives you some idea of how good that D is.
Yeah. Oh, right? I see. Okay. Yeah. So that he's a fifth guy says a lot about the decor.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That tells you that how far that D's come along in a short period of time, that they revamped it with Susie and
Cole, although Cole keeps shooting his own
door off. Cole's going to quit hockey.
I know he's
like,
having a tough go here.
Every goal, like that one goes in off of him and he's just not even in the way.
I know.
It's just off his jersey.
The OT winner. Hey, I interrupted something where you were saying that's not how it works about Hyman getting suspended on Zadorov.
I'm just, basically, that's not the way it works.
So
right?
To me, I've only seen one angle.
You got two choices: suspension
play.
Or no suspension. The one that takes the less heat off of us is to suspend him one game. That's all.
But you don't even give Hyman a fine. Nothing.
It was a scrum. It was like lots of close bodies in. I'm not sure how much contact there was. It's against who? Zadorov.
Yeah.
Big deal.
But we know that doesn't.
Big deal.
Big
it shouldn't
deal.
Matter who it is.
Yes, it does matter who it is.
I'm aware that it does, but it shouldn't.
It does.
I'm aware, but it shouldn't.
Hey, I'm sorry. This is not everybody's equal here. It's not. But it's about the noise.
To me, the Hyman cross-check, I need another angle. Because Zadorov is 20'12", and
TNT can come out with an angle 6 days later.
Maybe.
Where the league didn't have
like
it somehow.
And I would like them to. But, you know, he comes in. And if it looks like it looks in the one overhead, it's a pretty good shot to the mouth.
Yeah.
And
let's move on.
That's what the league's doing. This is why Canucks fans are mad. It's because
the
plan is
the way
is
it
this.
Works. This is the. I'm just telling you the way it works.
Yeah,
I'm not telling you it's right or wrong.
Right.
I'm telling you the way it works.
I'm not even a Canucks fan.
You want
I'm,
me on that wall.
I'm
you
livid.
Need me on
there
that wall.
Always,
I'm livid.
There's always going to be two sides. One screaming, you know, one not. Where one screaming the other way, and it's like you're not going to please everybody. So pick the one that can kind of you feel like you're safest. Yeah. The noise would have been 10 times louder.
So the league did not try to do justice. They tried to keep it quiet.
Control the chaos or the noise.
Yep.
And that's what this decision was.
Can't wait for this game.
What a series.
What a hockey game we got tonight, boys.
Are we doing predictions yet? Or are we? No.
Let's go to break, and then we'll
go to break, and then we'll do game time out of it. Still plenty more to hear from Rick Tocchet as well, and Bednar Nikushkin. How that one shocked everybody. During the
Plus
Stanley
Trip
Cup
Tracy
playoffs.
And the Carolina Hurricanes.
Trip Tracy as well will give us a Carolina update and the belief that they can come back all the way and beat the New York Rangers. Plenty more still on Real Kipper and Bourne. Don't you dare go away.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Vancouver will go tonight without Carson Soucy. Let's go to Rick Tocchet on how he plans to handle that. Clip one.
Rick, you used the Soucy-Myers pairing a lot against Nashville's top line and McDavid. With Soucy out, will you plan on putting Zadorov with him, or do you kind of go more by committee?
A little bit of committee. I mean, we've done that this year where we've mixed some pairs for a reason, for times like this. Where guys can play with different guys. You know, might have to, you know, we've put Huggy with Hughes with some other guys sometimes. So I think it's a committee thing. Juleson and Cole's have been good together. You know, we've had some good pairs together, so they're used to it.
Huggy's an elite nickname.
It is. It is elite. I'm a huge fan.
Huggy Bear. Remember Huggy. Him?
Yeah. He.
What do you mean? Yeah, we remember. You don't remember that.
Huggy Bear?
Yeah.
No. Isn't it from like
Starsky and Hutch?
Oh, no, I didn't know that. No.
That's what I'm saying. Puppy.
Most assists per game in playoffs all time among NHL defensemen. Number one, Bobby Orr, 0.89. Number two, Quinn Hughes, 0.85. Just ahead of Cale Makar, Evan Bouchard, and Adam Fox. Point being, guys, pretty effective player here for the Vancouver Canucks.
Very.
Yeah. He's been really good. So the Rangers can't put away the Carolina Hurricanes. 3-2 now after the Canes put together an unbelievable third period. How about the Jordan Staal stick handle?
Rangy.
How long has he been in the league?
I don't know, 18 years? I made that up, but it feels like forever.
A long time. Best goal I've ever seen him score.
And the length of the single deke from where he took it to where he put that in had to be 25 feet.
His first year was 06-07.
He's almost been in the league 20 years.
And he scored
goals in the past.
Yeah.
But I don't remember an individual effort when the team needed it the most like that last night.
No, and then Evgeny Kuznetsov comes in, scores, and does the bird, which Sammy loves.
I don't love it. I love the fact that he has a signature, and it's a great Sally for him.
Yeah.
Not the biggest Kuznetsov fan, but yeah. I like that he has a signature.
Is there anyone?
What's your signature? You got one?
Panarin.
What, celebration?
Yeah.
Panarin no, I don't score, Rockets so I don't kick. Get to do one.
Nothing, yeah. No signature.
All right, we got Trip.
All right, let's welcome him in. We called him earlier on the show, Trip Tracy. Carolina's still alive. He's still alive.
Yeah,
that's all good
all
here.
Humming.
We're all good. Trip, how are you, pal?
Hey, Kipper, how are you? How are you, Justin? Great to be with you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, so what is the feeling now coming back home in a series that everybody had Carolina written off and questions on their head coach, Brind'Amour, staying, going, signing a contract, all of a sudden a lot of nervous Ranger fans out there.
You know, Kipper, I thought going into game four, because other than special teams, I really – liked the way that Carolina was playing. Shesterkin has been great the entire series, that once they won game four, you know, I really, we'll see how it plays out, but I really felt like if they could win game five last night, that they have an outstanding chance to win the series, because you being a former Ranger and a Stanley Cup winner, that, you know, if you could just flip the pressure, especially in the New York market, I think it's perfect that, you know, this is the one time in the series that there are two full days between games. You know, I don't think the momentum plays a part. I think every game in the Stanley Cup playoffs is a standalone. But to win that game and to have to do in the third period last night, you know, I think that, you know, there's pressure now. And the Hurricanes certainly have a great feeling and the way that they're playing that you hope extends into game six. We'll see how it shakes out. But I really felt like game five would determine this series. Ultimately, let's see if that proves to be true or not.
So the Canes tend to control the play against pretty much everyone they play. They're in the offensive zone for most of the hockey game, and they just kind of need their goalies to be good, not great. Tell us about the crease right now for Carolina and the trust they have right now in Freddie Anderson.
It's a great question because, I've had the privilege of being here for 25 years, Justin, and, you know, going back as a reference point to when Carolina won the Stanley Cup in 2006, when they went to Cam Ward down 2-0 going to Montreal in the first round, I had total conviction in going from Gerber to Ward. Gerber had been great in the regular season. And then when they went to Martin Gerber, sort of underrated in that Stanley Cup run down 2-1 in the conference final in game four in Buffalo, I had total conviction. I remember walking back from practice on the off day with Greg Stephan. He let me know that Peter Laviolette was going to go to Gerber. You know, coming out of game four on Saturday night, it was more of an internal struggle for me. Mm-hmm. Do you go to Anderson, you know, after the win? Do you go to Kochetkov, who I have a ton of confidence in? And for Freddie going into last night where he had to be because Carolina played so well in every department other than, you know, their power play, they gave up a shorthanded goal. The three areas that I was looking, and I'm still looking for growth from Freddie here going into game six, is his lateral movement, because I think the Rangers have really tried to target getting him moving from side to side with their skill. His rebound control, you guys know from his time in Toronto, when he's really feeling good about himself, he has the ability to absorb pucks and have swagger to his game. And then finally, the puck handling dimension, because that's one area that Kochetkov definitely, I would say, has an edge. And I thought Freddie, in the first period, there's still steps to be taken, but I thought he checked some boxes of progression with those three things. So I saw that in a game where the goaltender had to be nothing more than solid as progressive steps that you hope will get even more progressive moving into game six.
We're talking to Tripp Tracy, who does a terrific job covering the Carolina Hurricanes, also has a podcast, Digging In with Tripp. So as I'm watching the Rangers in the third period, you got Shesterkin in net. It's a 1-0 lead. You're just waiting for maybe something, a moment. And I'm watching Jordan Staal, who's been around for a very long time, give Carolina a moment on an individual effort. And I was telling the guys earlier, Tripp, that, you know, we've seen Jordan score some goals, but like this one was just a great individual effort against a pretty good defenseman in Braden Schneider. And then going in there and finishing on Shesterkin. I can't imagine the lift that it would have given that bench. And then, lo and behold, 3 minutes later, they're up 2-1 with the Birdman. I mean, where do you see that goal by Jordan Staal on what it could mean moving forward?
You know, Kipper, that's the tail end of your question and a great statement. I think is TBD in terms of what it could mean. But to give it some context, you know, I sojourned, because it's not an easy place to get to all four Staal weddings in Thunder Bay. All the family, and fortunately, they're four wonderful guys of great faith that I know there isn't going to be a divorce and there's not going to be another one I got to get up there to. And you know, as well as I know Eric, in, you know, the order of their age, Eric, Mark, Jordan, and Jared, they all have some subtle differences to their personality. And Jordan is hard on himself. And, you know, because of that, I think it's at times more difficult for him to trick his mind into creating offense with all the other things that he's done in the series, because he's been a beast. And so when I think about that moment that you mentioned, Kipper, here's a guy that has had probably more 5-on-5 chances than any Hurricanes player going into the third period with a season on the line of game five. And he makes that move on Schneider, but But knowing Jordan the way that I do, I thought he'd just funnel that puck towards the net and there would have been nothing there on Igor Shesterkin, who was in the zone. And he makes that move using all of his Condor reach to go forehand, backhand. I couldn't help but wonder on the radio broadcast if he went to school on Gensel, who had a similar breakaway at the end of the first period, and recognized that forehand, backhand was there. But you know what, boys, that's digging in mentally for me, not to just make what would have been a can of corn shot offering, and instead making that move that changed absolutely everything. What does it do from this point forward? Because I've seen Jordan go on some mini offensive runs when he starts to have confidence in his offensive traits. Let's see what it does for him.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the identifying characteristics of the Carolina Hurricanes rests behind the bench in Rod Brind'Amour. He is the Carolina Hurricanes to many of us. What are your thoughts on, you know, during playoffs, having sort of a contract, a public contract, I don't want to say dispute, but negotiations, you know, here in this market, everyone's talking about what could we pay to get Rod Brind'Amour. You know, what are your thoughts on Rod and his contract situation with Carolina?
What I would say, you know, because I remember years ago, you know, when I first got going as a broadcaster, and Glenn Wesley, who I loved as a Hurricane to the ends of the earth, he used to come in before practice and I'd have a coffee in my hand and John Forsen and I would be there and he'd say, "You got any scoops, guys? Scoops?" And I finally said to Glenn, Wes, I'd call him off the air, love him to the ends of the earth. I'd say, "Wes, my job is as the color analyst. If I was a scoop guy, I'd work at Baskin-Robbins and choosing from 31 flavors." And so I'm not, you know, trying to take the easy way out here, but my singular focus since the puck was dropped in Madison Square Garden, 9 days ago in game one, has been totally consuming as the color analyst of the team. How do the Hurricanes win this series? That's been my 24/7 mental focus. And what I see in a coach who I happen to have a very close personal relationship with is a coach whose faith in his team has stayed, it's not even surprising, but as always, profoundly strong. There was some noteworthy external commentary when they went down 3-0, ideologically about the way that he's approaching the game, shot volume, et cetera, et cetera. The necessary growth needed in special teams. But I see a coach in this series that his faith in his group and as a microcosm, his daily, weekly, monthly, yearly faith in the importance of Jordan Staal, whether he's scoring or not, just has not deviated in the slightest amount. So within the series, I'm just trying to figure out how Carolina wins this series. If down the road, if you were to ask me that question, I probably would give you a more opinionated thought. I do think that at the end of the day, Rod's DNA and his bloodstream is of the Carolina Red.
You know, so much. Just one more. Can you quickly tell Justin Bourne how good Jalen Chatfield is?
Oh, you know, there's something to be said for guys that, because there's limited opportunity when you're not projected as a can't-miss prospect, when it oftentimes takes a second organization where you've got to earn it. And he comes from the Vancouver organization, and, you know, you get lesser opportunities than a guy that you've made significant investment in. You've got to be mentally, physically prepared, invested with all the controllables to take advantage of oftentimes your one opportunity. And Jalen Chatfield has done that from the get-go. He's a great skater. He hasn't needed to so much in this playoff run, but he can play either side. Most defensemen say they can do it, but not many can. Mm-hmm. And Slavin was hurt last year, and he had to play his offside with Brent Burns for, I think, an entire month of January. His play didn't fall off. He could handle the excess minutes. And I think that I would say, gentlemen, because I think this is the strongest compliment that you can get. You guys are in Toronto. You know, when Brent Burns first got here, he goes to the rink so early. We were taking an Uber early to the game in Calgary. And Brent Burns, I wish you guys were in that Uber. As Brent was talking in supreme complimentary fashion about Jalen Chatfield's upside and the fact that he was such a willing sponge to try to learn from Brent Burns of how he can get better. And he's become an extremely important piece of their lineup. And since Brett Pesce went down, which we all know is a massive loss, Chatfield, Orloff, I thought D'Angelo, after a bit of a rough game in game four, was solid last night. But Chatfield and Orloff deserve just a gigantic amount of credit with the way that they've elevated when you have such a significant loss in the blue line.
Tripp, great stuff, man. Enjoy game six. It's going to be electric in Carolina.
Thank you, Justin Kipper. By the way, I just talked to you being a former Whaler. I just talked to Chuck Hayden, the Hall of Famer, before I came on, and he said, say hello to that great former Whaler, and he misses going to your restaurant in Markham.
Yeah, well, Chuck's a great guy. Called a few of my goals in Hartford.
Cool.
Send him my best. Thanks for doing this, Tripp.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tripp.
Great stuff from Tripp Tracy.
Yeah, just like a Tripp signed a free agent contract with the Hartford Whalers in 96. I don't know if you knew that. He had some Whalers ties as well as a goalie.
I did not know that.
Oh, I'm here to help.
I'm way before me. Yeah. All right. Way after me. Sorry.
It's game time. Presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds to find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Now, we're getting into the time of year where the odds for the favorite to win the Stanley Cup are a little bit shorter here. And the two favorites are the Dallas Stars and the Florida Panthers. The Dallas Stars are plus 225 to win the Cup. Kipper, I believe, was that your Stanley Cup final that you may have predicted? So the books are liking what you have. The Edmonton Oilers are next. This is the crazy part to me. The Edmonton Oilers are up down 2-1 in a series to the Vancouver Canucks where they've looked largely bad. The Vancouver Canucks are 12-1 and the Edmonton Oilers are plus 450. And they're down 2-1 in a series.
Yeah.
I thought that's wild. Yeah. So they still have trust that, you know, Shelovs is going to fall apart here, that the Oilers are going to get going. But if I'm...
What? Yeah, no
If
way.
I'm Rick Tocchet, I'm just like, you guys got to go to Bet365. You got to look at the odds. He's going to win the Cup and look at that because that's crazy to me. Yeah. Like,
place your bet. Is that what you're saying?
No, no. I don't think you should do that. But okay, I'm saying, look. Just look at it look.
Keep them away from that stuff.
They look... like, they have no belief in you.
Right.
Everyone has no belief in you. So I just think that's interesting anyway. So obviously two games on the ice tonight. Florida, massive favorites, minus 220. They think that series ends there. And the Edmonton Oilers as well, minus 205. The Vancouver Canucks, plus 170 in Edmonton tonight. So Bet365, disrespecting the Vancouver Canucks. My Vancouver Canucks, you know, pandering.
Connor-driven.
But they think do think that the Oilers are going to have a big statement tonight. But I mean,
Connor, after getting no points, just gets a million
twice
points
in the series. Yeah.
So you can.
He needs three or four tonight.
He probably will.
You could do a lot worse than the Vancouver Canucks, who are red hot, plus 170 against a guy making his first career playoff start. You can do a lot worse than that. So that was Game Time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
In 12 games after recording 0 points this season, McDavid has 26 points.
Okay, guys, listen, we got to get to one of the biggest stories in the NHL, and that's Nikushkin now no longer a member of the Colorado Avalanche. Is
Nine
now stage three from the NHLPA. And, you know, Bednar was asked about it, basically said, you know, yes, it's disappointing, but then there's the human element of getting his life in order. Justin, something that's near and dear to your heart is the challenges that he's had. You've gone through it personally here. What are your thoughts when you first heard about Nikushkin now not being a part of the team and going into a stage three situation?
I just, you know, I have a lot of sympathy, you know, for the guy and what he's going through. You know, I've seen some people say some things like the team is mad at him or whatever, and that's fine. The players and the team are allowed to be disappointed that he's not available, but he's obviously in the grips of something that he's having a tough fight against. I feel for him. I wish him the best. It's obviously the hockey is secondary at this point. Don't necessarily agree with some of the ways it's handled through the league, but I understand that. I'll just leave it at I'm rooting for the guy.
You know, the story's not going to go away.
No.
I want to get in tomorrow a little deeper on how things are handled and what you were just speaking of, because I think it's really important that we take a deeper dive here on how the NHL or the NHLPA handle situations like this.
Appreciate that. Let's do it tomorrow.
All right. Our thanks to all our guests. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow once again on Real Kipper and Bourne. Have a great night, everybody.